I just had a professional exchange with Minister Lavrov, where we covered a wide range of different issues, including the INF treaty, Ukraine, Afghanistan, and also the general need for dialogue NATO-Russia, which covers issues as risk reduction, transparency, and how to brief each other on, for instance, upcoming exercises. So this is part of the dialogue NATO and Russia has at different levels. In the NATO-Russia Council, bilateral meetings, and now also this meeting with Minister Lavrov. I think I will stop there, and then I give you time to ask questions. Okay.
Please introduce yourselves. Politico?
Deputy President Politico, Secretary General, did you encourage him to send a new ambassador to NATO?
There were nothing new about that. We are able to work with Russia with the Shashed affair that is there now, and also, for instance, during the NATO-Russia Council, in the last meeting, the Russian side sent Deputy Minister Rybakov to present or to represent Russia, and that was useful because he works with the INF issues, and of course then we had the Deputy Minister in Moscow responsible for the INF issues present at the meeting. So we are able to conduct our dialogue with Russia also without an ambassador.
Ansgar Hase from EPA. Secretary General, are there any proposals from the Russian side on the INF issues?
There were no new signals from the Russian side. I continue to call on them to come back into compliance. I highlight that there is a window of opportunity because the withdrawal process will take 6 months. And during this time, of course, Russia has the possibility to come back into compliance. They continue to deny that they violated the treaty, but the reality is that there are no new US missiles in Europe. There are new Russian missiles in Europe, nuclear capable. And all allies agree, and several allies have independently determined that Russia is in violation. So this is also not only dependent on the intelligence from the United States, but also from other allies. So there is no doubt that Russia is violating the treaty. We call on them to come back into compliance, and they still have an opportunity to do so. And we will continue to engage with them.
Yeah.
Sorry?
There
are a lot of verification mechanisms in the treaty, and we have tried to use them again and again and again. There is a specific verification committee, and there are specific, guidelines, rules on how to inspect. So a static display is not an inspection, is not verification according to the treaty, because to have real and effective inspection, you need to fulfill some criteria about, you know, how you measure, how you control, and a lot of details, which are very specifically regulated in the treaty. So the problem is that they don't adhere to the treaty. We have engaged with them over years. This started with the Obama administration, and the United States have actually had 30 high-level meetings, including using the Special Verification Committee. So far, no change in the Russian behavior.
General, the German defense minister just warned that the old tit-for-tat approach on arms and missiles in Europe wouldn't work now. That obviously reflects a concern in Europe about what could come next. Do you agree with that? And is this now the next stage, that this is a concern, that perhaps this is something that could happen? And secondly, the British defense secretary just accused the Kremlin of using private security firms such as Wagner Group as a way of getting away with murder while denying that it had blood on its hands. I wondered if that was a concern more widely shared in NATO, and if so, how does that square with whether NATO allows use of such companies.
Our main priority, first priority, is to get Russia back into compliance, because it's possible, it's still possible to save the INF Treaty. At the same time, we, of course, realize that for every day they are not coming back into compliance, the likelihood of saving the treaty is reduced. And therefore, we are also planning for a world without the treaty and with more Russian missiles. We don't have to mirror what Russia does, meaning that we don't need what some people call, or what Ursula von der Leyen referred to as tit for tat, meaning mirror what they do. We have started the process of looking into how to deal with the Russia, also how to respond to a world without the treaty and with more Russian missiles. This is about military options, but also, of course, political options, how to take new initiatives, for instance, within arms control. I will not prejudge or preempt the conclusion of this ongoing work in NATO, but the important message is that NATO is and will be united. We will respond as an alliance. This has been clearly stated by all allies, but especially by the United States. It was a clear message from the defense ministerial meeting this week. And we have to remember that NATO has been very united on this issue back to the 1980s. We have also been united ever since the Obama administration raised their concerns 6 years ago. We were united in December when all allies agreed that Russia is in violation and called on Russia to come back into compliance. We were united in the beginning of February, where we supported the U.S. Decision, and again called on U.S. On Russia to come back into compliance. So I cannot preempt the conclusion, but what I can say is that we will maintain that unity and act as an alliance. Our response will be measured. It will be coordinated with, as an alliance. And then we don't have any intentions of deploying new land-based nuclear systems in Europe. Meaning there is no need for to mirror what Russia does, because they deploy new land-based nuclear missiles in Europe. Well, what we have seen is that Russia is responsible for actions like, for instance, the Skripal case, the use of a chemical agent in Salisbury. They have also been working with different private security firms. Regardless of how Russia organized these kind of actions, this is something we strongly oppose, and we have been very clear in our messaging about this at several occasions.
So you talked to the Russians in the NRC format just a few weeks ago, when you and after you said they were in denial, and now it happens again with Foreign Minister Lavrov, who also still denies that they are in conflict with the INF Treaty. So is there any point of having ongoing discussions with the Russians unless they come back to the table?
It is absolutely important to continue to try to save the treaty. I will not speculate about the likelihood of succeeding in doing that, but I think to just give up and to say that this treaty is impossible to save is wrong, as long as it is a window of opportunity for Russia to come back into compliance, and we have this six-month window before the withdrawal process is completed. So we will continue to engage with Russia, we'll continue to call on Russia, and we will do that as an alliance. NATO allies will do it, and of course the United States, which is a signatory to the treaty, will also call on Russia. At the same time, we need to realize that this treaty may also break down, and of course a treaty which is not respected is only a piece of paper, doesn't keep us safe. And therefore, we have started the planning, the preparations also for a world without that treaty. So we do these two things in parallel. We have to try to save the treaty, but at the same time we cannot be naive. We need to realize that there is this treaty is really in jeopardy, and there's a danger that in a few months we don't have the treaty anymore.
Secretary General, can you please give some details on Ukrainian discussion? Did you agree on something or, again, agree to disagree?
So we discussed Ukraine. I expressed the NATO positions. They are well known. We have expressed them many times. NATO positions are well known because, you know, we have so clearly over many years stated that we don't accept the illegal annexation of Crimea. We call on Russia to stop destabilizing Donbas, eastern Ukraine. And I also said that we call on Russia to release the sailors and the ships they seized near the Strait of Kerch not so many weeks ago. I see that this is really a difficult situation, especially for the people living in Ukraine. At the same time, we need to continue to raise this issue, or not least because of that, we need to continue to raise these issues, including Ukraine, with Russia, because Russia is our neighbor, and Russia is violating the sovereignty and the integrity of neighbors, as, for instance, Ukraine.
Michael Birnbaum from the Washington Post. Mr. Secretary General, a year ago, the message from the U.S. delegates here at the Munich Security Conference was basically ignore the tweets, pay attention to the policies when it came to what the United States is doing in the world. Based on what has happened in the year since, how do you balance the tweets with the often contradictory things that come from President Trump's associates and representatives in terms of how you understand what U.S. policy is in security affairs?
Also, President Trump has been very clear on that he is committed to NATO. He has stated that several times. He said it just a few days ago that he's 100% behind NATO. He said it, for instance, after the last summer at the NATO summit. So the message from him has been that he's committed to NATO. But he has also clearly stated that European allies have to step up and invest more. And that's exactly what is happening. European allies are investing more. From 2016, they have added 41 billion extra for defense spending, and we expect that number to be 100 billion by the end of next year. President Trump has a direct style. He uses Twitter more than many other presidents have done, and he is very direct when he speaks, also with allied leaders, as he did at the summit last July. We had a very open and interesting discussion there. And there was no misunderstanding. No one in that room were able to misunderstand the message from President Trump. That was that he is committed to NATO, but we need fair burden sharing. And the reality is that all allies agree on that fundamental message, that we need fair burden sharing in an alliance where the United States have paid too much of the total costs. And therefore, we see that this is now changing. And not only are European allies doing more, but United States is increasing their presence in Europe. So what I see, I see a lot of disagreement between allies on issues like trade, climate change, the Iran nuclear deal, and also on other issues. But I also see that when it comes to NATO and security, North America and Europe are actually doing more together than we've done for many years. We train more together, we have stepped up in the fight against terrorism together, we have the new training mission in Iraq, and the United States is increasing, not decreasing, their military presence in Europe. So, yeah, the tweets are different, the language is different, but the core message is that the United States is committed to NATO, and we see that both in words and in deeds, and that's the important thing for me and for NATO.
Secretary General David Sanger from the New York Times. Two quick questions for you. On Afghanistan, the phraseology you used to use in NATO was all in together and all out together. I'm wondering, does that live to this day? And secondly, I was wondering if you could bring us up to date a little bit on your effort to begin to understand and develop an offensive cyber capability for NATO. Until now, you've had cyber that has been pretty well just defending your own networks, but you're heading into a series of elections, which I think you'll be vulnerable to more of the kind of activity we saw in 2016, a little bit in 2018. And I'm wondering what your efforts are taking, not to defend against it, but also to counter it and create some sense of deterrence.
First, on Afghanistan, we went into Afghanistan together, and we will make decisions on our future posture together. And of course, when the time is right, we will also leave together. So that still stands. And that was actually one of the main messages from the defense ministerial meeting in Brussels this week, because we discussed Afghanistan. No decision has been taken about a withdrawal, but of course, we strongly support the efforts of Ambassador Khalilzad to reach an agreement with Taliban, because the aim is not to stay in Afghanistan forever. The aim is to fight terrorism, to prevent that Afghanistan once again becomes a safe haven for international terrorists, and to create the conditions for a political peaceful solution. When that will happen, no one is able to tell. But we are closer to that such a deal now than we have been for a long time, because there are some encouraging signs from the Khalilzad talks with Taliban. Still many unsolved problems, but at least some encouraging signs. And we also have to remember that President Ghani showed courage when he took the peace initiative or initiated the peace process last summer, and also had the ceasefire last summer. So we will continue as an alliance with our partners to coordinate and to decide together, and that was clearly stated by the United States, by all NATO allies, at the Defense Ministerial meeting this week. So together still is valid when it comes to Afghanistan. On cyber, what we call national sovereign cyber effects, but many other refer to them as offensive cyber, is something we are now integrating into NATO. We have created the framework for NATO allies to integrate or to contribute their national sovereign cyber effects into NATO missions and operations. Several allies have already done that. Some actually new allies announced that at the defense ministerial meeting. NATO allies also have in the context. No, I cannot announce those names. Some are public. They have to do it themselves. Also, I risk announcing names on allies who are not done it yet publicly, but. Some of them are already public, that they have integrated or made their sovereign cyber effects available for NATO missions and operations. We have seen the importance of this in the fight against Daesh, ISIL, because offensive cyber was used against Daesh, has been used against Daesh with great success, taking down their, networks, which has been extremely important for them to finance, to communicate, and also to recruit. We are, of course, aware of that cyber is a challenge in many ways. There is no military operation, no military conflict without a cyber dimension today. And we are also aware of that cyber has been used to try to meddle in our political democratic processes. That's one of the reasons why we have significantly increased our cyber defenses, the resilience of our cyber networks, increased awareness among allies, while we are exercising, we recently had the biggest ever exercise in the world on cyber defense, and while we also have decided actually that cyber can trigger Article 5. So, and while we have established cyber as a domain alongside air, sea, and land. So we are strengthening cyber in many different ways. Actually, there are some current, those allies that have made public that they have announced that they are contributing with their sovereign cyber effects is US, UK, Netherlands, Estonia, Denmark, Norway, Lithuania, and Germany. So we thank them.
Mr. Secretary General, in the last week, Norway has said yet again that Russia is still jamming its GPS signals, and also said that 11 fighter jets made a fake raid on the radar center and then turned around at the last minute. Did this come up in your meeting, and to what do you attribute this continued brazenness in Russian behavior? And also, a quick Belgian angle, not this, but have you been apprised of this story that there were a Belgian security service, the head of Belgian security services has been accused of spying?
First, the jamming. Yes, that was raised during the meeting. I raised it because we are very concerned about the jamming of GPS signals. This is a risk for civil aviation. It poses a risk for emergency services, search and rescue. And I know that, for instance, up in the high north, this is not only a risk for Norwegians, but also for Russians, actually, because we work together with Russia when it comes to search and rescue up in the high north. So any interference, any jamming of GPS signals is extremely serious. It's irresponsible behavior and something which NATO takes very seriously. Norway, as a NATO ally, Finland, as a NATO partner, have raised with Russia, and I raised it in a meeting now with Minister Lavrov. We also, as part of the NATO-Russia dialogue, we also regularly raise issues related to air safety, more in general. We didn't raise those specific events outside Vardø, but we have seen similar, activity in the Baltic Sea, in the Black Sea. So we have had a work going on, especially related to the Baltic Sea, to develop guidelines to improve air safety and the way pilots are behaving to avoid any dangerous situations. On the Belgian issue, I don't have anything to add.
And did he offer any apologies, accidental missteps?
That's not the style. But I think it's important to raise it because we need to have maximum attention on this because this is dangerous, and of course we risk that this may cause some serious incidents or accidents, and then it can become really dangerous. So therefore, we have raised the issue of air safety, of safe behavior, but also the issue of jamming GPS signals. With the Russian side, and we will continue to do so.
Damon Wake, AFP. Just going back to the INF issue, you said that there's no new sort of signals, information proposals from the Russian side. What's your reading of the mood of, you know, having now met with Ryabkov a few weeks ago in the NRC and now with Lavrov today? Do you sense any kind of hardening of their position or any weakening, or is it just are you just getting the same thing again and again?
I will say that we don't see any change in any direction in a way. It's very much the same, and we regret that. Because, as I have stated again and again, this treaty is a cornerstone for our security. It's a cornerstone in arms control. And I am part of a political generation that was many ways very much formed my understanding of security politics, security policy was very much shaped by the discussion about intermediate range forces in Europe in the 70s and the 80s. And it was such a great relief, such a great achievement when the INF Treaty was signed in 1987. And it was an arms control agreement that didn't reduce the number of missiles, but actually banned them down to zero. So this has really been kind of gold standard for arms control. And now we see the demise of this treaty, and we risk that within a few months we don't have the treaty anymore. So this is really serious. And you know, all nuclear weapons are dangerous, but these nuclear weapons are, if possible, even more dangerous than many other nuclear weapons, because they are so easy to conceal, to hide. They are mobile. There are many. They are nuclear capable, and they reduce the warning time to, you know, extremely a few seconds or minutes, and therefore they reduce the threshold for any potential use of nuclear weapons in armed conflict, and all of that make these missiles so dangerous.
Wall Street Journal, also on the INF. You've said on the one hand that you don't want to preempt the results of discussions about what the response to the Russian missile system could be. But on the other hand, you've also said there are no plans for new nuclear missiles in Europe. Isn't that a contradiction? And doesn't that ruling that out risk looking weak?
There's no contradiction, because what I do is that I establish, in a way, some kind of principles for the way we are approaching this issue. It is extremely important, the principle, that we will address this as an alliance. We don't discuss bilateral arrangements. Of course, in theory, I've seen some commentators speaking about that there will be some bilateral arrangements between the United States or some European NATO allies. No, that's not the plan. The plan is that we will act as an alliance. That's not to preempt the conclusion, but it's going to establish an important principle for the conclusions, that we will be united in our response. The other principle is that we will be measured, meaning that we will take our time and we will be responsible, meaning that we need to find a mix. We need to find a way to respond which preserve credible deterrence and defense, but at the same time do whatever we can to avoid a new arms race. Exactly where that, how to do that, well, that remains in a way to be decided, but that's the idea, that's the principle, that's what we are trying to achieve. So we will take our time. And the third is that we don't have an intention of deploying new land-based nuclear systems. Within those, as I say, broad guidelines, there are many options and many ways of compose a response. And we speak about military options, but also, of course, different political initiatives, because we will continue to work for arms control. NATO has always been on the forefront for arms control since back to the 1960s. So that's the reason why I say it. And also to, in a way, reduce uncertainty and avoid unnecessary speculations about what we may do or may not do.
Question. Yesterday, Vice President Mike Pence, U.S. Vice President, accused Iran of planning another Holocaust. What do you say about that?
All allies are concerned about Iran's behavior in many different ways. We are concerned about their missile program. They continue to test missiles. We are concerned about the way they support destabilizing activities in the region, support for different armed groups. And, of course, all allies agree that Iran should not develop new nuclear weapons. So that's the message from NATO on Iran.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. This concludes this press point. Thank you very much for coming.
Thank you.